Once upon a time, there was a rich businessman from New Jersey who bought a derelict apple orchard in upstate New York near Hudson. He pruned the trees, fertilized the ground, fixed up the sales shed, and put up a brand new hand-painted sign on the highway. Then he leased the place to a young local family for less than market value, with the understanding that they would give him 10% of the apples. With no business experience and high hopes of owning their own place someday, the tenants agreed and sealed the deal with a handshake. Then the wealthy landowner got into his Range Rover and drove back to New Jersey, and no one in Hudson ever laid eyes on him again. The tenant couple and the neighbors they hired to help them loved the place. They went out to tend the trees at sunrise, and they stayed out each day until after dark. They used organic pesticides. They hauled water by hand if there was a summer drought. They built small fires throughout the orchard when the first frost came before the apples were ripe, nursing them all night so that the trees stayed warm under a blanket of wood smoke. By October 1st, the air smelled of applesauce and cider. Every time the tenants took a deep breath, their mouths watered. Meanwhile, the trees were so heavy with fruit that they looked like emerald ladies with too much jewelry pinned on. At harvest time, the picking and sorting had to be done quickly, so the tenants and the help they hired worked in shifts throughout the day until they couldn't see anymore. When it was all done, mountains of apples rose from the wooden bins in the sales shed. Golden Delicious, Jonathan, Wine Sap, Arkansas Black. Happily exhausted, the tenants were standing there admiring the fruit of their labor when they heard gravel crunching in the road behind them, and they turned around to see an 18-wheeler with New Jersey plates backing into the shed. The two big fellows with bulging biceps got out and started loading apples into the truck without even introducing themselves first. And when one of the tenants went up to negotiate the 10% business, one of the big guys just picked him up and set him out of the way. So the rest of the tenants had a quick huddle and decided to introduce the truckers to the country version of People's Court. One of them cranked up the tractor while the others got hold of some pitchforks and pruning hooks, and before long they'd persuaded the landowner's men to return south empty-handed. Get lost, they explained vigorously, and the burly guys did just that. Now, if you were sitting in a dark movie theater where no one could see you watching this story unfold, who do you cheer for? It's sort of natural to root for the scrappy laborers. We love it when the little guy sticks it to the man. But you know, the tenants were wrong. It was not their orchard. They'd made a deal. The vineyard owner deserved his share of the produce. Yet there's something about the story that doesn't sit right with us. Barbara Brown Taylor wonders if it's the casual mention of slaves which puts us on edge, or maybe it's because no one likes an absentee landlord, whether it's in upstate New York or first century Israel. Or maybe it's because some of us had friends or grandparents who were sharecroppers or tenant farmers, and we know how hard that life can be. Tending someone else's land, bringing in someone else's harvest, making someone else's profit. Maybe we root for the tenants because many of us are interrogating the systems of property and business ownership in this country, how mortgages are structured, who gets them easily, and why in 2015 African Americans trailed others in home ownership by 30%, and it's worse today. Maybe it's because deep within us we believe that every person or family should own their own acre of sunshine. And all of that is good and important. But if Jesus' parable is to be believed, ownership of the vineyard is not the issue. It's not for sale and never will be. The owner is not looking for buyers, but tenders who will give him a share of the produce at harvest time. And perhaps that's the most radical turn of this parable. The story casts human beings as stewards of the land and everything else in creation, which is a concept that many of us struggle with or even reject because it challenges our sense of what we think we deserve. Think of all the deeds and titles and fence lines we've put up to prove our ownership. We have registered plats and mortgage payment books and tax bills with our names on them. Countries have boundaries and crossing guards and guns aimed to protect them. Not to mention billions of dollars spent on defense, all in the name of owning. And we hold on for dear life to our positions and pedigrees and promotions. Don't our possessions often end up possessing us? I wonder how the world would be different if we lived like campers committed to leaving no trace, or as travelers who make sure a place is left better than it was when we found it. or citizens who put the common good ahead of personal gain. Debbie Thomas tells us that the April edition of National Geographic magazine was really two issues in one, with one half read from the front cover to the middle and the other half read beginning at the back. One story told what planet Earth will look like in 50 years if we do nothing substantive about climate change. The writer described prophetically a grim, dangerous world of mass extinctions, searing forest fires, deadly heat waves, fierce storms, and widespread suffering for the human race. The other half portrayed a more hopeful, verdant version. What planet Earth could look like in 50 years if we harness our time, ingenuity, resources, and technology now to undo at least some of the damage we've already done. In this scenario, we would find sustainable ways to feed ourselves. We'd clean up our oceans, rivers, and lakes. We'd provide carbon-neutral energy for all. We'd reimagine our homes, streets, cities, and corporations in light of the most pressing needs of the environment. We begin to reverse climate change and prevent many, if not most, extinctions. Theologian Thomas continues, I know that the parable of the wicked tenants, as this story is properly called, isn't straightforwardly about climate change or the environment. Jesus tells this particular story to indict the religious leaders of his day for exploiting and mistreating God's people, which the story calls the vineyard. The parable is meant to expose the corruption of the religious elite and condemn their obsessions with privilege and power. But at its heart is a distinction that I think speaks pointedly to our current environmental crisis. What the tenants in the story neglect to understand, or very deliberately choose to ignore, is that they are stewards rather than owners of the vineyard. When the landowner asks for his rightful share of the harvest, the tenants take offense, as if the vineyard belongs to them, and it's the landowner who's in the wrong for making a claim on the land at all. Somewhere along the way, the tenants have forgotten their vocation, if you will, their standing in relationship to both the land and the landowner. To put it bluntly, we have forgotten that we own nothing, nothing at all. Everything belongs to the landowner. Ours is not a vocation of ownership. It's a vocation of caring, tending, safeguarding, cultivating, and protecting on behalf of another. If we conceive of ourselves as a single family, black, white, brown, rich, poor, working class, gay, straight, male, female, young, old, and more, a fabric woven together by mutuality, a body which is diminished whenever one part suffers, then we're perhaps more able to think of we first instead of I, to organize around the common good, to know that poverty and violence and racism are never someone else's problem, but ours, and that their existence anywhere is what keeps us from being one beloved community now. How can you make God's kingdom come today in some small but measurable way? And what's stopping you from getting started? Poet Laura Kelly Fanucci writes about this pandemic. When this ends, may we find that we have become more like the people we wanted to be, more like the people we were called to be, more like the people we hope to be, and may we stay that way better for each other because of the worst. You see, I don't think we were ever meant to be owners. We're stewards, tenant farmers, really, who tend this life and its riches on someone else's behalf. And the point of living is to be as generous with each other as God is with us. My friend Betty Ann was a community organizer in Wilmington, Delaware. She's a little woman with platinum blonde hair and an edge, and I'm not sure I ever saw her without a push broom. She was either leaning on it because she was tired, or waving it for emphasis, or she was using it to sweep up some part of her hardscrabble neighborhood. One afternoon she said, David, I know who I work for. Do you? I mumbled something about my parish, and she interrupted and said, I mean, I'm free. Free to make trouble if it's going to help somebody. And I'm free to love who I want because God don't care about labels the way people do. David, I came into this world naked, and I'm going out naked when I die, and everything in between is just borrowed clothes. And then she paused and asked me, is the vineyard here going to be better when you leave? Amen.